This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. That's Jack Nicholson counting doorknob clicks in the movie As Good As It Gets. Counting is one classic symptom of obsessive compulsive disorder, a condition where obsessive thoughts and compulsive behaviors disrupt people's lives. Hollywood seems to have embraced OCD as the perfect condition for the perfectly quirky character. Remember the movie What About Bob, where Bill Murray's character drives his psychiatrist, played by Richard Dreyfuss, nearly out of his mind?
What is the crisis, Bob? What is it that you are truly afraid of?
What if my heart stops beating? What if I'm looking for a bathroom, I can't find it, and my bladder explodes?
But as awareness of OCD has grown, more people who suffer from it have gone public. Here's comedian Howie Mandel on The David Letterman Show.
I have this OCD.
Now, let me ask you a question about that. You had it long before you knew what it was. Is that true?
I have been in therapy for a long time, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I've had it from the time as long as I can remember. I know that when I have a younger brother, and we used to fight, and the way he would win is hold up the lid to the laundry hamper. He would hold that.
All the pop culture references to OCD may seem to trivialize the disorder, but for millions of people worldwide, it's a crippling disease, and it hurts their ability to have a normal life. Joining us now to talk about obsessive compulsive disorder is Dr. Michael Jenicke. He's a leading expert on OCD and a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's also the chairman of the Scientific Advisory Board for the International OCD Foundation. Welcome to Radio Boston, Dr. Jenicke.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Jared Kant. He's currently a grad student in the Boston area. He was diagnosed with OCD at age 11. Jared is also the author of The Thought That Counts, a firsthand account of one teenager's experience with obsessive compulsive disorder. Thanks for being here, Jared.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we're taking callers during this. The average person who suffers from OCD sees 3 or 4 doctors before receiving the right treatment. We want to know if you think you're one of these people or if you think you might have OCD. Maybe you know someone with OCD. We want to hear about your thoughts and your various tales of your experiences with this. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Dr. Jenicke, we just heard that montage of movie clips and TV clips that give us different portrayals and maybe more extreme ones of obsessive compulsive disorder. But of course, not all cases of OCD look like that, those very clear-cut, explicit ones. Could you give us a very simple definition of the disorder?
Well, the disorder is best defined by its symptoms, I think, and the things that you normally think about, especially from the movies and the TV shows, are things like washing, hand-washing, cleaning, checking things over and over, checking to be sure that something's happened or something didn't happen or that the doors are locked. I noticed when we came here, I checked my door a couple times, but I actually had left the engine on because my Prius doesn't make any noise. So I do a little bit of it, I guess. So these kinds of things. There are other patients that don't really have any overt rituals, anything you can see. It's going on in their head. They have repetitive thoughts going over and over again. For instance, if I had OCD and I left this program, I might obsess that I said the wrong thing or I said something inappropriate. It could actually paralyze me. I wouldn't be able to function, wouldn't be able to sleep tonight, couldn't get to work tomorrow. So those kinds of things are very common and very, very painful with the disorder.
And the root of it is some sort of exaggerated worry, not just a normal real-life worry that we might dwell on, but something that may be exaggerated or irrational but that we can't let go of.
Yeah, it's really the part of the brain that makes you certain that something has happened or has not happened is not working right. So you really know that the door is locked. You can see it's locked, but you can't get that feeling of certainty. You can't be certain that there aren't germs on you. You can't be certain of this. And that part of the brain, whatever it is, does not seem to be working right.
I noticed that on the list of subtypes of OCD, you also have hoarding because of that fear that you may run out of something in the future. You have what you call praying or scrupulosity, which you describe as excessive concern about offending God. So it's some worry about something you think is going to happen.
Something you've done inappropriately. The hoarding may be a little different than typical OCD. When you go into people's houses that hoard, they can have stuff, junk, that piled all the way to the ceiling. People have actually died when their junk has fallen on top of them. A couple of brothers in New York or Collier brothers are famous for this. If you want to read more about these kinds of hoarding and the other kinds of symptoms, you can go to the OC Foundation website, and there's a lot of information there now.
As I was looking for some accurate number of how many people in the U.S. have it, the numbers are, they range from 2 to 5% of the population, from 2 to 4 million people. What do you consider the most accurate number?
Well, I think there's a large study called the ECA study, and it was somewhere between 1 to 3%, not only in the United States, but in the entire world. Every time it's been looked at, it's 1 to 3% of the population. So probably 4 to 7 million people in the United States alone. It's an astounding number when you think about it.
We actually have one of those people here in our studio. That's Jared Kant. And Jared, you were diagnosed with OCD when you were 11, but you had symptoms before that. In fact, I, from reading your book, I see that you remember a time when you were reading obsessively about the Ebola virus. And looking back, you think that was an early warning sign.
Well, when I first, when I was writing the book, the associate medical editor had asked me, you know, do you think, you know, you say that it happened at 11, but it doesn't just happen that suddenly. And at the time, I'd never really given it much thought. You know, I actually had come to the conclusion that, yes, it just sort of happened. Because it does, when it hits, it feels like a bomb, like it drops. But in the year prior, there was that the media was really interested in hemorrhagic fevers. So the book The Hot Zone was really popular, and so was that movie with Dustin Hoffman, Outbreak. And so I was really into science, and I came across a copy of The Hot Zone, and I thought it was really interesting. The Hot Zone has a, on the cover of it, it's supposed to look like a scanning electron microscope of an infected cell. And if you were to watch as a, how I held the book over the course of the year, you'd see that originally, you know, I was tracing, it was embossed, so kind of beveled, so I would sort of trace it and really was really interested in it. By the end of it, I couldn't touch it. If I actually touched the cover, then I would actually wash my hands. And I never made much of this because it just sort of seemed, you know, one, I was 10, and, you know, people hadn't really connected things yet. And two, it didn't reach the sort of incapacitating level that it did when I was 11.
This is when you were at camp, I believe. Was this
Yes.
your moment when the bomb hit, as you put it?
Yeah. That's when it sort of drops like a bomb, for lack of a better word, yeah.
So what was that moment you had at camp?
Well, the moment was a series of instances where everything was extremely disquieting. We had talked before about thoughts that you can't let go. And at one particular time, I remembered, you know, camp would get, you get like an allowance at the camp. And, I don't remember the exact amount, but I was looking at the dollar bill. So it was either a 10 or a 5. And I was looking at the serial number to it and just really, I was very anxious. So I was trying to distract myself. In my head popped this thought out of nowhere that this particular dollar bill, that this money had come from something. I think at the time in my head, it was the mafia. I have no idea. You know, it's, again, this is, it comes out of almost nowhere. And I became sort of fixated in this idea that this dollar bill was not my property. And I ended up, of course, getting distracted spending that money. And then the entire bus ride back to camp, thinking of all the elaborate ways that I could try and get that dollar bill back. Obviously, they were all completely impossible, and there was no point.
Now, interestingly, there was sort of a, I think it was a pediatric psychologist somehow affiliated with the camp who found out this was happening and was able to
Yes.
help you get a diagnosis. So you had an early, someone interceded and helped you. But Dr.
Right.
Jenicke, oftentimes people aren't diagnosed that early, for one thing. And also, this sounds to me, and tell me if I'm correct, that a more extreme form of OCD, where there actually can be more subtle forms. For example, you know, tapping a glass a few times before you drink. Or I think, Jared, your book said that if someone has an awkward pause in conversation, it may be because that person has to repeat backwards first everything the person said to them just before they speak. So you have to go through this ritual. I'm even thinking of Nomar Garcia-Para and mm-hmm. The way he would adjust his gloves. Do you often see it much subtler than what Jared is describing?
Well, since we have a clinic and I'm a doctor, I generally don't see people who have a few habits. And maybe everybody has a few of these things, except for me, of course. Almost everybody I see, if you talk to them about OCD or they find out I do OCD, they explain some quirky things they do. Adjusting their tie, or a lot of superstitious things. They have to wear a certain tie to a meeting so that the outcome will be good. And they don't really have OCD, but it sounds sort of like OCD. When it gets bad enough that you're preoccupied with it and it's disabling you in some way, then it's a more serious concern, and then they come to medical attention.
We have a caller from Newton who has a question about this, and this is Hannah. Hannah, what's your question about OCD?
Yeah, it seems to me that at different periods in time, there are diagnoses that get more attention than other diagnoses. I think most recently bipolar has gotten a lot of attention. And OCD seems to be sort of that new diagnosis with the TV show Hoarders. And I'm curious, A, why you think that's happening, and also B, if you think that's helpful for people with a disorder or ultimately creates more problems.
Let me jump in quickly and say the immediate reason we're talking about it is that this is OCD week. It's been designated, which we thought was a good time to bring the two of you in to talk about it.
That's what I was going to say. This is a special week to sort of enhance OCD awareness, and there's a national event that's going to be publicized at McLean Hospital and other places this Saturday. And again, that's on the website, how to get information on that. So it's actually been maybe the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a lot of publicity about OCD, actually more than bipolar. And it's not just the hoarding shows. There have been movies made. There's other television shows on. Obsessed was one of them, a number of programs. Larry King's done some programs, and Dr. Phil done that a couple times. So there's more and more publicity. And I think this is really warranted since it's such a common and potentially disabling disorder.
I think if I can just jump in for a minute. I think to address the question, is it helpful? When something's portrayed well and portrayed with respect, I think that it can be very empowering for people or folks who are experiencing similar things, such as, you know, bipolar or OCD or what have you. When it's not respectful, I don't think that it's very helpful. But I think that getting the word out in general is always a good thing.
Dr. Jenicke, it used to be thought that people that had OCD or obsessive tendencies, that was a result of bad parenting or maybe even faulty toilet training, that somehow it made you obsessed with germs or being dirty. But now research shows that there is more likely a genetic element to this.
Well, I think many patients have a genetic root of the disorder, and we and others have been studying the brain in patients with OCD compared to people without. And there are clearly some pathways that seem to be overexcited in OCD, and there are actually surgical procedures that are done very rarely to help OCD, and some patients have a very good response to interrupting those pathways. So there's the genetics is a really bright area, but no treatments have yet come out from that. The data is still being analyzed from the Vegas studies.
Now, there are also rare cases when a head injury or a disease like encephalitis or even a strep throat infection can trigger OCD.
These kinds of what we call organic or medical causes of OCD are really pretty rare. The strep or pandas, that may be more common, but that's still being researched. Head injuries, there aren't more than 10 cases in the whole world's literature, and I've seen a couple. And I think that's a very unusual way to get OCD.
We have a caller from Jamaica Plain who says she has been given or had been given a diagnosis of OCD. And this is Mary. Mary, what's your OCD situation?
Hi. And actually, I am calling under a pseudonym because I am living in the closet with this. I'm a professional career woman, and I had been suffering with OCD symptoms from about the age of 8, which was back in the 1960s. So to be terrified by scary, intrusive thoughts, none of the physical tics, but just with the thoughts, it was horrible for me. And no one was able to tell me what was wrong with me. Through my own research, I finally found myself described in a book in about 1994 or so. And in 1995, I received the formal diagnosis, and I was told that my symptoms were off the charts and that I was very fortunate. I was told I was very resilient, that I had been able to be as successful as I am in my life. After that, I received treatment from a doctor. I've been seeing a therapist for a long time. That helped that. And then finally, I found my way to the OCD clinic, where I'm working with one of the fine clinicians there and have done cognitive behavioral therapy. I am still working very hard. The scary thoughts are gone. The repetitive thoughts are still with me, and it is a daily struggle sometimes. But
Mary, was your treatment a combination of therapy and medication? What kind of treatment?
Yes. Yes, it is both.
So, Dr. Jenicke, could you talk to us about that? As you write, do you believe that the best combination is both therapy and medicine?
Yes, I think if I had to pick one treatment for OCD, the cognitive behavioral therapy would be the one I would pick. Most patients are also on serotonergic and other kinds of medications now we're adding. And so the combination of medication plus cognitive behavioral therapy is the way to go for most patients.
And Jared Kant, you have had both of those, is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
You wrote in your book that you at first were told that that cognitive behavioral therapy would be terrifying, so you delayed doing it for a while.
The person who told me that actually is in this room.
It was Dr. Jenicke.
Right, and he wasn't
Don't
trying
believe
to,
a word yeah. he said.
He wasn't trying to scare me. Cognitive therapy, and I by no means was trying to dissuade anyone by relaying that, it's that the big part of probably the most prominent part of CBT for OCD is exposure and response prevention therapy. And in that, you are literally facing your fears. And that is terrifying. OCD itself is a terrifying illness. So the concept of picking out the things that you're very terrified and then facing them is very scary. Now, since then, I have gone through it. I can say what you do is you go through it and you pick, what are you afraid of? You list them out, and then you do a very graduated list, working up, starting very small. And that's not very terrifying. That's actually, and when you start to see the gains, it feels great.
So, Dr. Zenneke, you basically make people sit with their anxieties, resist whatever ritual they might normally use to cope with their anxiety, like washing their hands repeatedly, and then realizing, look, everything's okay. Is that the idea?
Yeah, the anxiety will go up quite dramatically, and then it will level off, and then it will actually come down. And you do that over and over again, and then you gradually work up the list. We call it a hierarchy to the things that are more frightening and more terrifying. And once you get to the top, you really can do pretty well. And then when you leave treatment, you have booster sessions, and sometimes the OCD sneaks back again, and you have to come up with the same kind of approach. Many people are really good at designing their own exposures and doing their own behavioral therapy. Others need sort of more guidance.
Jared, in your book, because you were young when you were first diagnosed mm-hmm. with OCD and you were still in school, your book includes tips for students on what they can yes. do in a school setting, like find a safe place like a counselor. Mm-hmm. What are some other tips for students who have OCD?
I think one of the big things, and now this is even easier, although unfortunately cost would be an issue, but a lot of schools have electronic means of taking down notes and also of writing things down. One of the most common things I hear, and one of the things that I experienced that was so obnoxious, for lack of a better word, was having to erase and rewrite and erase and rewrite, and to the point where it goes through the paper. So putting things down electronically, and then maybe obviously we want to work towards not using what we'd call an enabler. But in the meantime, if you have to send your notes to someone safe so you don't destroy them, then that would be one thing. I think really OCD comes up most, like any anxiety disorder, when you are in a stressful environment. So trying to find ways in which you can make school less stressful for yourself, naturally the OCD will decline.
Dr. Zenneke, the previous caller, Mary, mentioned that, as she put it, she's been in the closet about this. Is that part of the problem, is that people know they have it but don't want to admit it, and that prevents them from getting treatment?
I think that was the case many years ago. Right now, it seems to me that most people are very willing to come out about it, because there's, you know, like Howie Mandel and other people come out and talk about it, very well-known people who are very successful. So I think being in the closet is much less common than it used to be.
Jared, you have taken medications for this as well as mm-hmm. had cognitive behavioral therapy.
Sure.
You've said there's a stigma associated with medications. Do you still feel that's the case?
I do. I think there is, and I think also there's a lot of a misunderstanding about medication. One of my least favorite phrases that I hear often when people are sort of joking about how reliant the American public is on pharmaceuticals is quote, high on Prozac, end quote. I have yet to experience this phenomena. I've been on Prozac for about 5 years, and I've never gotten high off it, never even euphoric. So I think people often think that medication is a crutch. In reality, medication is often a vehicle to do the really difficult work, and that's what it was for me. But that is a stigma.
Dr. Zenneke, I wonder if quickly you could tell me one thing. You've said that you're willing to do unusual things to help your patients. What are some of the unusual things you've done?
Well, I think more in the old days, but a lot of people don't have money. They're not able to work. They're not able to function, don't have insurance. So I don't mind traveling to people. I've gone into filthy basements. I've been into places where no one has been for 10 years. You know, this is, to me, is enjoyment, to try and help people. And if you can make a dent, you see someone like, let's say Jared was living in a basement, you can get him out, and now he's in school. I mean, that is a hugely rewarding thing.
Dr. Zenneke, thank you for that. Dr. Michael Zenneke is a leading expert on OCD and a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Gerald Kant is a graduate school in the Boston area who was diagnosed with OCD when he was 11 and has written a book about it. To learn more about OCD Awareness Week and the International OCD Foundation, visit our website, wbur.org/Boston. We'll be back after a break. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.